Okay, so this is just starting the recording. So my name's Julian Lasseau, and I'm the practice manager at the Crane Surgery, and I'm one of the kind of co-runners of the Dr. Harry's podcasts. And I'm talking today to Dr. Alexander Yarash, who is concerned with COVID graft, which we were discussing in our last podcast, and it's to do with graft databases. And the uses for research into COVID research, the way of linking together different COVID research, as I understand it. So, as I was explaining, Alexander, this we normally do like a monthly podcast. It's not always monthly because sometimes we get so busy it turns out to be a bit longer than that. And it's normally to do with medical research on medical themes of one kind and another. And we came across the article in, in Digital Health, but about COVID graph. And I'm a little bit into databases because I've done a number of relational databases for recording INR results, and I did one to do with the surgery finances, and you know, so relational databases for different things, and I'd never come across graph databases before, so that was interesting. I'm also quite into open source, and the type of graph database that you're using is an open source one, I understand. So that's interesting to me as well. But obviously the research into COVID is an interesting thing from our point of view too. So do you want to just tell me a bit about yourself and how you got into this and your background and so forth to start with?
Yeah, sure. So I studied bioinformatics some years ago. And I quickly realized that I'm not the kind of hardcore programmer who sits behind the desk 10 hours a day. I'm rather the kind of person who has a serious background in biology.
Serious, yeah, yeah.
And also medicine. And I was always interested in applying or developing software or tools for the real users.
Right.
In many cases, we have lots and lots of algorithms that are super sophisticated that solve many, many problems. But the problem is that many of the users cannot use it because it's too complicated to type it into a command line, or people are not using Linux or something.
Yeah.
And so I did my PhD in a wet lab doing cryo-electron microscopy and 3D modeling. So this is a little bit of my background. I developed some tools and pipelines for that, for 3D modeling. And since almost 4 years now, I'm the head of data and knowledge management at the German Center for Diabetes Research, which is a federal institute from the German government. And we are studying the core.
I lost you for a second. Your signal froze for a second there, Alexander. So you were just saying what you were studying. So you're in this diabetic institute, and what you were studying there, yeah.
Yeah. So since 4 years now, I'm head now of the data and knowledge management at the German Center for Diabetes Research,
yeah,
which is a German federal institute. We are non-profit, and we are studying the causes, the understanding, and the prevention of diabetes.
Right.
So we are not pharma. We are not developing drugs. So this is not our main purpose. We are studying, the understanding. And this is like a twofold problem. One is the clinical side, where we have patients, we do clinical studies.
Right.
And on the other hand, we have basic researchers across the country that are studying diabetes from many different perspectives. Can be physics, can be chemicals, can be lipids, whatever.
Right.
Can also be animal models, up to pigs and mice.
Right.
And so this is where I started, like almost 4 years ago, where my task is, how do you access data? How can you make data available, accessible, or findable, and so on? And I quickly saw the problem that of the researchers basically draw notes and edges on a whiteboard. If you ask them, what kind of problem do you have, or can you write down, or can you draw something on the whiteboard so that they can understand it? Usually they draw a node, let's say a gene that is connected by a protein, or a clinical study that is done in a specific city or in a specific context.
Right.
So usually people draw their data as graphs, which is a set of nodes and edges. And now the thing is, for data storing or for data capturing, everybody basically uses this strange thing of tables or relational databases,
yes,
which doesn't make any sense for me. Because you have highly connected data, you have very heterogeneous data,
yeah,
which is a graph, and then you kind of force that into this frame of a table.
Yes.
And this was kind of contradicting, as I would say it.
Right.
And usually I say I'm too stupid for SQL, so for relational databases, and that's why I'm super happy. That I saw Neo4j as a graph database provider or vendor.
So Neo4j, it's called. So this is the open source graph database provider that I was talking about before. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So it's a database provider which is now the number one vendor for graph databases.
Yeah.
They are open source,
yeah,
which is super interesting, especially if you are in an academic environment. And as I said, they provide us with graph technology.
Yeah.
And I was super surprised to see how it works. I installed the demo version. I just clicked a little bit and played a little bit around for, I think it was 1 or 2 days. And after 1 or 2 days, I already had a prototype of my data model and also a prototype for the first use case.
Right.
And this was kind of a, how do you say, surprising a moment where me as a, at that time, the developer, I was a one-man show because my team wasn't present there. I was able to create a product or create a database that immediately runs at the user's place, and they can see the same entries that I enter. They immediately see the same as me as a developer. So
right.
To say. So you don't have this this barrier between computer science and SQL statements and queries and all that stuff. That
right.
Usual medical scientists or medical doctor do not understand.
Yeah.
So this is different with
graph databases. Yeah. So at this stage, we're talking about kind of diabetes information that you're feeding into this system.
Exactly.
So let's just backtrack. So let's assume that we're being listened to by people who aren't all that familiar with graph databases, and they're maybe not all that familiar with relational databases either. So the way that a relational database is set up, in basic terms, is. I work in a GP surgery, so we've got a clinical system, which is basically a big relational database. So what we start with is a list of all our patients, and you've got a table which has got the patient's surname, first name, date of birth, NHS number, demographic details about them, and whether they're male or female, what their address is, and so forth. And then you've also got, attached to that, you've got things like all their consultations, all of their repeat prescriptions, all of their acute prescriptions, and those are, all that information is in different tables, and they're linked together via these SQL statements. But basically, it's one-to-many relationships, or one-to-one relationships, or many-to-many relationships. The different things that are used in relational databases. So you have one patient, for example, who can have many different consultations or many different prescriptions. Now, in a graph database, as I understand it, and I haven't really got into graph databases, but the difference, the main difference is that that the actual that instead of having like a table and then a link from that table to another table, which is just a link and nothing else, that link itself, the relationship, can actually hold information. Is that right? So it's as important as what's in the tables, in other words.
Exactly. So this is the big difference. It's also called a labeled property graph.
Right.
Where, as you said, a relationship or a node can hold several attributes or information.
Right.
Information in general. And usually you can see a graph like the nodes are subjects or entities.
Yeah.
That are connected by relationships.
Yeah.
For example, if we can have two person nodes like you and me,
yeah,
and we can draw an edge between us, say we're doing a video conference, we know each other,
right,
and so on.
So there could be one. So there could be that's one of the interesting things about it. So you're a node and I'm a node. We could have more than one connection with each other. So connection number one could be we're both interested in medical research. Connection number two could be that we've actually got this video link between us at the moment. So and then once you've set up this kind of this graph database of lots and lots of different nodes all over the place with lots and lots of different relationships, you can go and query it to see who's interested in medical research on this database, who has ever had a video link with each other, for example. So you can explore the cross relationships between these different links between the is that right? Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that is a fair summary. That makes it crisp and clear, I would say.
Right.
And as you said, you usually go through a path in your graph.
Right.
You follow a path, which is your query, and which is super easy to read for a user that is a non-computer scientist.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense for me, because the users in the end are researchers that are medical scientists, that are doctors, that didn't study computer science, obviously. And that's why they have a deep domain knowledge. We often call that deep domain knowledge.
Yeah.
But they are rather, you say, novices.
Right.
For computer science.
Right.
And I'm modeling the data model of a graph as you would speak in a sentence.
So right.
Like a person is connected to a person, or a person takes a medication, or a person has clinical data,
right,
what else, something like this. And so the user or the doctor in the end, they can read the data by themselves, because it's more like a sentence.
Yeah.
And the little filters that you said, so this is the this is not the issue. The main part is the concept behind it, that in a relational database, you have many, many different tables that you have to kind of join together.
Yes.
Things really complicated.
And you have to decide in advance what you want the joins to be, don't you? What you have to decide.
Exactly.
So in a relational database, basically, you have to decide what the architecture is going to be before you start putting in the information. You have to think, right, I'm going to have one table that's got all my patients in it. I'm going to have another table that's got all my repeat prescriptions in it. And the link between them is going to be like this. So you've got the architecture, you've decided what the different fields in your different tables are going to be, and then you start inputting the data. What strikes me about graph databases is how do you actually, when you actually come to put in data, how do you actually do that? Do you kind of just make up the structure as you go along, or what's the process for actually inputting lots of data?
In most of the cases, we start by importing, let's say, old data or tables,
right,
Excel sheets or CSV files,
right,
and there we specify what column is a node, what column is another node,
right,
or we call it labels, so different things like person and medication.
Right.
And in other cases, we say, okay, the combination of two different columns is a new relationship.
Right. Okay. So talking about the diabetes thing, how have you found that this has helped you with your kind of, it clearly helps with visualization. So from what you're saying, you think that this is a much more kind of intuitive and visual way for people who aren't very familiar with databases and computer things to be able to access the data. But how have you found that it's helped with research? Have you found that it's kind of highlighted new things that you wouldn't be able to get at otherwise? Or
when you create a new graph, basically you create new, and or let's say the information is there,
right,
but you don't see it directly. When you create a relationship between two nodes, this can be a hidden connection that hasn't been there before directly, but since you are creating that in a graph, you have a new connection.
Right.
And that makes things visible, not only visible in terms of your eyes, but also visible if you walk through the path and look for specific information.
Right. Okay.
And so often you can also see a graph as a network with a shape. And usually we as humans, we do a lot of visual thinking, right? We see something visually and that is similar to something else that we've seen before.
Right.
And this is kind of a concept where algorithms calculate something on this graph database.
Right.
And find out patterns that haven't been there before.
Okay, so are you saying that the actual process of putting the information into the graph database, because it's always asking you to define how you're going to relate one thing to another thing, that makes you think about relationships in a way that you wouldn't do otherwise? And the process of inputting is actually, in a way, it's making you rethink all the information and it brings into the foreground of your mind these relationships.
Exactly.
Right, okay. So let's go back to your story. So you were working with diabetic information, and how did you move from the diabetic thing to COVID graph, which is...
Well, so this is now the interesting part.
Right.
As I see data in healthcare research or in biology or in biomedical field, everything is connected, right? Genes are connected to proteins, they are connected to functions or to phenotypes or to diseases, so everything is connected. So it makes a lot of sense to connect this via graph database, like the native technology underneath. And since diabetes is not a single disease, we have many different long-term complications like cancers, Alzheimer's, we got obesity,
sure,
which in most cases comes before diabetes.
Yeah.
You're obese and then you're getting diabetes. So everything is connected and we are on a disease level. And everything what's connecting that is the biomedical entities, as I said, genes and proteins.
Yeah.
And kind of experiments. And then there was COVID. And I thought, we have the same problem that COVID-19 is probably not a single disease. So we knew that it's something has something to do with lung diseases.
Right.
But people have a higher risk of getting a stroke and a heart attack, and the bell was ringing, we say. And I thought, well, I think that COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 is not a single disease. And why not helping researchers also in the development or in the understanding of COVID development of a vaccine? Why not doing the same exercise that we do in the diabetes field?
Yeah.
But also for COVID. And there was a challenge by the White House. They gathered in March. It was 40,000 publications. Now we have 130,000 publications. made a challenge. Do something with it.
Right. Okay.
Do something with the data. So with scientific publications, and this was the second thing where I'm really struggling in my organization. Usually I should read all day, but in the end, I'm not going to ever read all diabetes publications.
No.
Not for COVID and not for the long-term complications. So I thought maybe we can put the literature data into a graph database. And on top of that, we are doing natural language processing as a machine learning technique to automatically understand texts and to automatically recognize recognize entities like genes or proteins.
Right.
Side effects or whatever. And these side effects we represent as nodes in the graph database. And whenever two publications talk about the same gene or the same effect somewhere in the cell, we connect the two publications.
Right. So the actual process of feeding this information in is scanning in text or inputting text. And then you've got intelligent software that will recognize key terms, and then you can start to link those key terms together from one piece of research to another.
Exactly.
Okay.
And thereby we are spanning a network of different information that is connected now.
Right.
Natively on a graph database. So this is where we started, and obviously it was the same idea. To say, okay, we have roughly 30,000 human genes that has something to do with COVID, with diabetes and so on. We also have clinical trials that deal with patients in COVID and maybe COVID and diabetes or COVID and whatever, lung disease.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we started to integrate more and more data and to connect the data sources that usually a researcher would ask separately.
Right.
We usually talk about data silos. So everywhere we have databases that are silos,
yes.
We can query them separately, but usually the link between them is not present. And in COVID graph, things are much easier. Instead of having a list of, let's say, genes, and then going from the gene database to the protein database to enter this list, you get the proteins, and then we have another list, which usually is an Excel, and then we go to the next database and query that and go to the next database and so on and so forth. We can easily query that just saying, just give me the input, and I'm querying that automatically through all the databases.
Really?
Because they are now connected in a network. So, yeah, so we are basically speeding up research. We help people to avoid this error-prone, tedious work, basically.
Yeah.
So this was the idea.
Yeah.
And,
just give me some idea of the logistics of this. So how large a team are we talking about feeding information into this COVID graph? How many people and how many sort of different research documents and things have you fed in there so far? And how long has this been going on for?
Yeah, so this was the next really surprising event, or let's say, thing. When we had that, I had some colleagues, one of my team members and one of our collaborating partners, and I asked them, should we do that together? Should we provide something for the public?
Yeah.
And make that as an open source project? And I guess within 1 or 2 days, we had at least 5 or 6 different companies, IT companies that are consulting, other pharma companies that are working with Neo4j technology, and they were super hyped and said, okay, we want to contribute.
Right.
We're happy to contribute something on an open source level so that everybody can benefit from that, and hopefully we find a vaccine much faster.
Right.
And this was like a aha effect. So this community that comes together in this Neo4j universe, as we name it, it's just amazing. And we had in the first 2 weeks we had I think, let's say, 5 developers there, and within 2 weeks we had 20.
Right.
And all the participating companies said, yeah, we want to contribute.
Right.
And that's why. We could provide the first application within 4 weeks.
Right.
Not only data integration and making data available, but also a user interface that is easy to understand and also interactive to use.
Yeah. And so how long, when was the inception of this? Obviously sometime since COVID came on the scene, so sometime this year.
Yeah, mid of March.
Mid of March, right.
And when we were all set into the lockdown in Germany, And so we had some video conferences and some calls, and just said, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. Well, brilliant. And so what's your sense of kind of, you know, where you are now and where it's going from the point of view of, you know, so I mean, I think I mentioned that I read about this in the Digital Health Digest, and I think they said that you discovered discovered that some of the receptor cells for COVID were much more widespread in people's different, you know, in the lungs and in different parts of the body than had previously been thought. You found that you just thought they were in one or two places, and actually they turned out to be all over the place. So that's obviously one kind of like little breakthrough that you've had, in, from the point of view of how COVID operates in the human, you know, physiology. But are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Because your picture's just disappeared. I think my computer's just logged me out. So how's it going? How are things developing from the from your point of view?
So things are developing really, really good. We still have a community of roughly 15 people, active people that are providing code,
right,
providing data sources, discuss that with us. How we can connect the specific silos to it, how we can extend the graph by information.
Yeah, and these 50 people, what spread all across Europe or spread all across the world or Europe and USA or?
Well, there obviously there are some in Germany, but
yeah,
we also have people contributing from Denmark, from Copenhagen, from San Francisco, from Boston.
Right.
So worldwide, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had some nice breakthroughs. One is this gene that we recognized. Usually, a specialist or a virologist would say, "Okay, this is the obvious target." If you are not a specialist and you search for an important gene in this case, how do you tackle that problem? And this was like, we are asking the database, which of the genes is mentioned most with all the publications,
right,
which one is mostly connected in this graph.
Right.
And this was this ACE2 gene, which is the receptor of the coronavirus.
That's right, yeah.
And I started reading, you know, like we have the receptor identified, okay, so this is how SARS-CoV-2 enters the cell. So maybe we can block that, right? This would be the next obvious step. And when you go to Wikipedia, you immediately see that this is not a good idea because this was done in rats some years ago.
Right.
Trying to block this receptor. And obviously the rats died from lung collapsing, so they couldn't breathe anymore.
Right.
So it's not a good idea to block that.
No.
And that makes a lot of sense in the end, because why SARS-CoV-2 is related to a lung disease. Problem was then we queried the database, or we interactively queried through the graph, where is this ACE2 gene also expressed in what kind of tissue?
Yeah.
And there we used information from the Broad Institute, and we found out that almost all the tissues in human have this ACE2 gene.
Right.
So it must be that, how do you say, in turn, this means that SARS-CoV-2 is not only attacking lung cells, but also heart cells or nerves or whatever.
Right.
This makes a lot of sense, because we see that obese and diabetic patients have a higher risk to get infected, a higher risk to die. We also know that the number of strokes and heart attacks increased dramatically.
Right.
So this makes a lot of sense.
Yes, and there's also, I mean, as I understand it, I'm a layman in this, but as I understand it, there's also some evidence about long COVID, there's what we call long COVID starting to emerge about, and the fact that long COVID seems to involve lots of different, you know, as you say, it's not just the lungs, it's maybe there's this brain fog aspect to it. And there's maybe things like the you know, the liver and the pancreas and goodness knows what. So all over the place, it seems to be having effect on people's physiology.
Yeah, and as we speak about this this information, I mean, this is now lots and lots of information that we connected now through a technology and can, as scientists, critically assess that. But this was the point where we said, okay, COVID is not only COVID, like I had it in the diabetes research field. So it's a mixture or a network of different events and diseases and dependencies, I would.
Right.
And this is where we want to go now. We are not only including now COVID-related information, but all the other information.
Right.
And this is where we started to integrate 30 million more scientific publications.
30 million?
30 million. And we integrated several thousand clinical trials. And also, this is a huge information blob coming from patents.
Yeah.
Because if you as a company, if you write a patent, usually you have a kind of a prior art and you use literature, there's information in it. So why does a specific pharma company use this specific amino acid to tackle the one or the other disease?
Right.
So there's information. And we connect that all together, and so people can learn from that.
Right.
This is independent from any disease or any, I would also say species, because we are also integrating other species. And I guess you would agree that many of the experiments it would be unethical to do in human,
really?
But you can do it in an animal model, or you know that an animal model has already certain experiments,
yes,
where you can deduce from and can say, okay, the corresponding partner in the human body is this or
this. Like the thing you were saying about rats, if you switch off the ACE2.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is information that we as humans can use. And which some of the researchers in their specific field have, so they have a huge knowledge, but this is very domain specific or very, how do you say, narrow in their research field. But having the wider or the broader scope there,
yeah,
I guess makes it possible to study diseases from a completely new perspective.
Right.
And this is our vision.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic. Well, it's that's really interesting stuff, and it sounds as if it can it's just going to keep expanding from what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
people are how do you say motivated by this story that it's open source, that we make that available to everybody.
Yeah.
It's still on a voluntary basis. Unfortunately, the funding situation in Europe is not that overwhelming, I would say.
No.
So nobody wants to invest in infrastructure, because in the end, this is kind of infrastructure.
Yeah.
You set a database, and
yeah,
it's not that you make science. So this is step number two, making science on that. And usually the grant applications got rejected because they say, you know, this is the new database, it's nice, but, you know, where's the progress?
Yes.
And people don't see the potential of graph technology there, and they also don't see the potential of this broader information collection.
It's interesting in a couple of ways. First of all, it sounds as if you're kind of moving towards the feeling that I mean, you said SARS, COVID-19, is that you're starting to think of it more as a syndrome than as a distinct illness. So it's a whole sort of group of interrelated illnesses, if you like, linked together. But secondly, your research is sort of taking you to the fringes of COVID-19 itself and beyond, how it relates to other illnesses beyond that. So this just keeps kind of linking outwards into other areas of research, by the sound of things.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that, as I said, that makes a lot of sense. Because in many cases, we in research, we see events that we didn't expect, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes because an experiment failed, or we did something wrong, and then obviously there is a new event that we didn't understand, and so we kind of go to the literature and look for this event and say, oh, wow, okay, this is connected to something completely different than I was studying about. And so I come from one to the other field and,
yes.
and kind of hop from one to the other node. And as I said, it makes a lot of sense in many diseases or in healthcare research, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, we're going to have to draw this to a close, I'm afraid, Alexander. But it's really interesting stuff, and I'm going to put this on our podcast, and hopefully it'll kind of help to sort of publicise what you're doing. And you know, I can't say that we draw in a huge audience of thousands or anything like that. But it's really nice to have spoken to you, and nice to be able to get a bit of information out there to people about what you're doing.
So it was really nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
I hope that that graph will be the next thing technology wise. I hope that we can support some research not only in COVID but also in other diseases.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was super nice talking to you. So whenever you have questions, just Google my name or just drop me an email.
And I'll send you an email and let you know when the podcast is online. So
yes, super nice.
Well, great.
And, for the listeners, so we have a website, www.covidgraph.org. Everything is free and open source. You can query and you can click there and you can use it yourself.
Okay.
If you get any feedback.
All right, lovely. Well, thank you very much, Alexandra. Really nice talking to you. Goodbye now.
It was nice talking to you.
Yeah.
Stay safe.
And
maybe see you soon on the conference.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Bye.